You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Child Poverty Action Group have made, alongside the Welfare Expert Advisory Group, made a series of recommendations to government based on bringing down the levels of children living in poverty in Aotearoa, New Zealand, over the next few years, so prospectively like another Labour term. Currently, there are about 144,000 children that are living in poverty in New Zealand, and that's a statistic which neither the government nor the commissions that it's had into these levels find acceptable.
Amazing. Here is that piece now.
What are the changes that Child Poverty Action Group recommends that the government undertake if it wishes to reduce child poverty?
Well, we're saying that there are a few key things that they could do very quickly and very simply that will mean families who are struggling the most have immediately more money in their pockets to be able to afford food, to be able to afford to pay bills, all of the basic essentials that they are currently falling behind on. And one of those changes is that the discrimination should be removed from a portion of the Working for Families tax credit package, which is called the in-work tax credit. So currently, that amount of money, so it's $72.50 a week for eligible families, but you can only get that payment if you're off the benefit entirely, and if you're a sole parent, if you work 20 hours a week or more in paid employment, and if you are in a couple, you have to work 30 hours or more between you in paid work. So on the one hand, that particular payment doesn't recognise the value of caregiving as a job, but it also, and it discriminates against sole parents, because sole parents who are, you know, doing things tougher, you know, parenting on your own is not an easy job, and you know, there's a lot more juggling that has to come into that. So they're expected to work more hours per week per person, per adult, than a couple, and they have to be off the benefit entirely to get that money. So the idea behind it is that it's a work incentive, and that it pays for the additional cost of working. But we also know that when people are in casualised jobs, you know, they can't necessarily work that number of hours for whatever reason, that it doesn't necessarily incentivise working more. So, you know, it's really just the idea behind it is that it targets child poverty, so it's supposed to reduce child poverty. And currently what it actually does is it allows some families to have a little bit more money, and it also allows them to weigh up whether one parent in part-time work or one parent staying at home with the children is more beneficial to the family. So what we're saying is that in the short, it hasn't proven successful as a work incentive. It's a payment that's supposed to reduce child poverty. It's not reaching the children who are in the worst of poverty, and it should go to them. So we're saying that the work hours test should be removed. The paid work hours test should value all contributions, including parenting, as its work. And immediately, if that was given to every family who are on a welfare benefit currently, it would make them at least $72 better off every week.
What has the response been from the government to the series of recommendations that have been made to them?
Well, so far we are hearing that they are working on a 3 to 5 year plan for enacting on the recommendations of the Welfare Expert Advisory Group, but we haven't heard any immediate plans to address those particular recommendations. And one of those recommendations for us to that we see as being vitally important is to significantly increase benefits. But by doing the suggestion of increasing or allowing all families on benefits to have that and work tax credit, they're actually increasing welfare benefits, thereby making that payment very targeted to helping those most in need.
Has the government been hesitant to implement any new initiatives? Have they been wholly responsive, or have there been some things that they've been less willing to do than others?
Clearly in the last budget there weren't any specific increases to benefits, which we had hoped for. We also had hoped for this policy to be enacted, but we aren't hearing what they're planning to do next. So we are waiting for this 3 to 5 year plan to be released so that we actually know what they are planning in the short term and what they are planning in the long term. But what is, you know, what's vitally clear to us is that benefit outcomes are inadequate, they need to be raised significantly. So what we have seen, I suppose just to talk a little bit about that, was the Welfare Expert Advisory Group was established in 2018. They produced their report, so that was an establishment by the government. So they produced a report with 42 recommendations and 120 comprehensive recommendations in the early part of this year. And in response to that, the government has promised it will index benefits to average wage inflation from next year, and it will also index the threshold for paid earnings to the minimum wage increases as well. And the other promise is that they will put 263 more frontline staff in to help those in need at work and income offices, for example. Mm-hmm. So those are all really valuable initiatives, but what we've said is that benefits should have been indexed to wages for the entire time that we have had them. For them to suddenly be indexed to wages without being restored to the levels that they should have been at if they had been indexed properly, A, and B, if they hadn't have been subjected to all those cuts in 1991, then that indexation will only mean small increases year on year in the future. So we actually really, really need benefits to be restored to a level that provides an adequate living standard to everybody who has need of one, to every family, to every individual who has need of one right now. And then the indexation should come into that, and that will mean that they will be keeping up over time, and that will mean hopefully that families don't fall behind again. And what we're also asking for is that they do changes around housing. We need many more affordable housing options. We need a lot more state houses. We need perhaps eligibility to state housing to change so that more people can be eligible for them. And we just need that pressure to be taken off families so that they can actually thrive, so that they can go about their weeks without this huge stress that is causing all sorts of other adverse impacts on their health, on their mental health, and preventing them from being able to move forward and to meet all their children's needs.
For Child Poverty Action Group, what do you see as the key drivers of child poverty in New Zealand?
Well, it's a lack of incomes, really. It's a huge pressure of housing costs. So as the Child Poverty Monitor yesterday reported, 30% of the families of households on the lowest incomes, and these are households with children in New Zealand, are spending more than half their incomes on their housing, which means they're not left with enough for everything else, and they are the families that have to go to food bank charities regularly because they're not able to afford enough healthy food. They need temporary additional supplements from work and income so that they can continue to get by. They often need emergency grants for their housing needs. So clearly the drivers of poverty are lack of incomes, they're unaffordable housing, there's not enough housing, but also, you know, there are other pressures, there are the rising costs of living that contribute to that. But if we had more opportunities, I suppose, for people to transition into the workforce and to be able to do that without huge complexities and huge additional stresses, then, you know, more meaningful work opportunities. But we have a lack for all of those things, and we really, really need families who are in need to be adequately supported financially, because that is the key driver. And really, you have to look historically at the changes to the welfare system and the changes in housing to actually pinpoint where some of the things have gone wrong for families, so that they have, you know, become trapped in this deep poverty. They've acquired debt, which further impacts on their ability to make their ends meet, and they're just sort of stuck in this place where it's really, really hard to get out of poverty. So, you know, looking historically at those changes in the welfare system, those cuts in 1991, sell-off of state housing, property speculation as a booming industry, you have to really look to those things to see that there's a cohort of people who have never been able to get ahead after those changes, and we owe them a lot, I think.
You talked about housing and the environment, and do you believe that for a child that grows up in an environment where housing and resources are inadequate, that this can have a lifelong impact on that person's well-being?
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, if a child grows up in a housing situation where it's cold and damp, if they're constantly in transitional housing or emergency housing, they may be living in motels on and off, so they lack the stability and security, and their health is impacted by those, you know, from potentially living in unhealthy housing. Where they live in situations where, you know, we're seeing that more and more families are having to live together just to be able to afford to live in private rentals. And when they are having to do so, the other circumstances that can occur are infection spreading throughout the household more rapidly. You know, a cold spreads and goes round continuously. They just may never have that stability in their lives. We're hearing that some young adults who are struggling these days to find housing, some young adults have never had stable housing in their lives, and that has a huge impact on them, you know, when they're starting their adult lives. And if they've had health impacts because of unhealthy housing over that time too, some of those things can stay with them their life long. Also, there's the impact on their education. If a child moves from house to house, they may not be able to attend school regularly. If they're in transitional housing, or if there's not enough money for food, then they may not be able to get the most out of their education. And, you know, there are all sorts of additional factors that can have really lifelong implications for children. So it's vitally important, A, that they have enough money for healthy food so that they're able to have all of their needs met, so that they have their clothes, the warm clothes in winter time, so that they're able to go to school regularly and to be able to learn effectively because they're well nourished, but also that they are in a stable, secure home environment that's, you know, continuously throughout their childhood, so that they, you know, they have that sense of security, so that they don't have time out of school, and so that they have that stability in their lives.
I just want to ask quickly, who are we talking about when we discuss families living in poverty? What does a family living in poverty look like in modern day Aotearoa?
Well, I guess we can say for certain that there are, from the government statistics, that there are 174,000 children living in households who have income that is underneath the very lowest supplementary measure of the Child Poverty Reduction Act, which is 40% of the national equivalised median after housing costs. And we can say for sure that many of those children, if not all of them, will be living on households that are supported by a welfare benefit. We know that there are a lot of children living in sole parent families accessing a welfare benefit who are not getting enough money. Those benefits are too low. The stresses on those families are too high. We know, for example, that Māori and Pacifica are highly represented in the numbers of poverty based on population. Inevitably, we are seeing that I think Māori Pacifica women, mothers are bearing the brunt of poverty in New Zealand, and more needs to be done to ensure that they can live good lives.
Thank you, Jenny. So I'm going to have to wrap up here, but before I do, I'd just like to ask if there's anything you'd like to add.
Well, I suppose we'd like to add that we're really pleased that we have the Child Poverty Reduction Act. We're really pleased that the government has acted on that. And, you know, they made that a priority as part of one of the first things they did when they came into government. And that's a huge step forward. And the fact that that bill, before it became an act, was supported, had cross-party support in Parliament, just goes to show that child poverty in New Zealand is a hugely important issue to everybody. And what we all want to see is a New Zealand where all children can flourish. And to see that and to know that's going on is really, really important. So we're really happy with that. We're really pleased by the government's families package. We're really pleased that they're setting targets to reduce child poverty. But what we really, really want to see next, what we're missing is those next steps. What we want to see is what they're going to be doing for those families on the lowest of incomes, because we really want to see benefit incomes improved and urgently.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.